Years ago? Okay.
Okay, counselors, it's 5:15. We're going to get started with our agenda session. We do have three resolutions that were tabled at our last meeting. We will read those in, but to make it easier on folks, since we might want to have a little bit more of a discussion, I scheduled the committee of the whole meeting immediately following agenda session so that we have an opportunity to ask questions and have maybe a little bit more dialogue. But why don't we have those read in, Councilor Randorf, and then I think Mr. Shackman, you had something where we moved on with our agenda session.
Thank you, President Forsman. Item 3, Resolution 575, is a resolution authorizing approving the Digital Access Master Plan and implementation of the Dig Once policy for the City of Duluth. Resolution 576 is a resolution authorizing an interfund transfer to a broadband enterprise fund to be established up to $5 million from the Community Investment Trust Fund to support the Duluth Open Access Fiber Pilot Project. And Resolution 577 is a resolution authorizing the City of Duluth to submit an application to the State Deed Office of Broadband Development for a $3.2 million broadband development grant.
CEO Shuckman.
Thank you, President Forsman, councilors. I just will note, while recognizing that we're going to kick the questions and discussions on this to after the rest of the agenda, I will just note that item 4, Resolution 576, we will ask to be returned to the administration. And so if the clerk can note that, and I will attempt to save Councilor Anderson the hassle of reminding us all on Monday, but if that will be our ask for Monday, to just kind of clarify the discussion and make sure that everybody's on the same page about what our intent is with that resolution.
All right, very good. Thank you. All right, so we will save discussion on these three until later and move on to the consent agenda as it stands now, starting with Vice President Kennedy.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 578, resolution approving a collective bargaining agreement between the City of Duluth and Law Enforcement Labor Services Local 503 for the years 2022 to 2023. Resolution 610, resolution approving an employment contract with the police chief for the City of Duluth.
Thank you, Vice President Kennedy. Councilor Anderson.
Mr. Shuckman, I'm just curious about the effects of Chief Tuscan's retirement and how that will the interim. How does this contract affect the interim and the new?
President Forsman, Councilor Anderson, this is a contract specifically with Chief Tuscan. I'm fuzzy on the dates specifically, but late last year the deputy chiefs from the police department, who historically, along with the chief, had been a part of the City of Duluth Supervisor Association, chose to organize themselves under the collective bargaining agreement you see before you on the agenda tonight, working with LELS. And so when that happened, the chief also moved out of CDSA at his choice and is not represented at this point by a collective bargaining agreement. So he's one of the now, I think, 6 or 7 city employees who are not members of one of the unions. So with that in mind, we need to arrange a contract for him for 2022. The timing is obviously a little wacky with his pending retirement, but much as any other city employee who has a contract that we're working through that includes this year deserves to have that contract include all of this year whenever we settle it. Chief Tuscan's contract that is before you is for January 1st, 2022 through his, departure from city employment. And so it is not the timing we would have preferred, but also we had 3 other police collective bargaining agreements that needed to be settled. And so working those through, this is the timing we ended up with. And so this contract is in place through the chief's departure from city employment.
Follow up, please. Thank you, Mr. Shuckman. And then is there, just for understanding, as we move forward, there'll be a separate contract for the interim appointment, and then city will negotiate a contract with whoever the new chief is?
President Forsman, Councilor Anderson, I am not sure that we would have a separate specific contract for the interim. The collective bargaining agreement for the deputy chiefs that's before you has a provision in it that allows for one, if one of them were to be selected, and likely they would be, that there is a pay increase that's dictated in there for that interim term. And then once we select a new chief, we would negotiate a contract and bring that contract through in the same way that this contract is coming through for your approval.
And final question, would the new chief have the option of joining a bargaining unit if they chose to, or is that?
President Forsman, Councillor Anderson, that is, and Attorney St. George may want to chime in here, but my understanding is that that is a conversation for that individual to have with a bargaining unit that they deem appropriate. It's not something that we have an opinion on or provide any input on. And so in the absence of that arrangement, we would assume that we would negotiate a contract individually with the new chief. And anything you'd like to add to that, Attorney St. George?
No, that's accurate.
Great. Thank you for all of that.
Okay. Thank you, President Anderson. Or, wow, bad habit. Councillor Anderson.
Deja vu.
All right. Moving on to somebody who's definitely not the president. Oh, I was going to say Councillor Hobbs, but Councillor Mayo.
And curious about just the status of the other negotiations we have going on. I think, are we currently negotiating with our fire? And you said there are some other police ones on the table right now as well.
President Forsman, Councillor Mayo, all police contracts with the presumed approval of the LELS contract that's before you on Monday, all the police contracts would be settled at that point. The remaining outstanding contracts that we are in negotiation or yet to start negotiation on are the Supervisors Association, the Fire Union, and the Confidential Unit. They're the three remaining of the seven.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Councillor Mayo. Councillor Hobbs, under purchasing and licensing.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 589, authorizing a three-year agreement with Environmental Systems Research Institute Incorporated for Geographical Information Systems, GIS, licensing, support, and maintenance for an amount not to exceed $199,500.
Thank you, Councillor Hobbs. Moving on to personnel under Councillor Alstead.
Thank you, President Forsman. Number 587, resolution confirming the appointment of Sophia Green to the Natural Resources Commission. Number 596, resolution confirming the appointment of Jason Crawford and Michael Henderson to the Duluth Airport Authority. And number 597, resolution confirming the appointment of Lindsay Biddle, William Williams, and Rod Polson to the Duluth Transit Authority.
Thank you, Councillor Alstead. Councillor Anderson.
Thank you, President Forsman. Would it be appropriate to pull 596 pending getting more information about Mr. Crawford and the two?
I think that's just fine, and obviously it's your choice to pull it, and maybe we could pull 597 just since we're going to be doing the interviews the same night, and I think that's typically been our protocol.
Thank you.
All right, very good. Okay, moving on to Councilor Randorf and Planning and Economic Development.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 595 authorizes the execution of a purchase agreement with Duluth Economic Development Authority for the sale of property in the Fairmont neighborhood for a nominal consideration. Resolution 600 is a resolution authorizing a funding agreement with Churches United in Ministry, granting up to $150,000 for the purpose of providing infrastructure assistance for outdoor living zones and warming centers. Resolution 601 is a resolution authorizing First and Second Amendments with Entry Point LLC, doing business as Entry Point Networks, for broadband internet consulting services in the amount not to exceed $76,000 and extend to the termination date of December 31st, 2022. Resolution 611 is a resolution authorizing the proper city's officials to enter into a general fund appropriation bond master grant agreement with the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development deed for the Duluth Regional Exchange District project in the amount not to exceed $97,720,000 and further authorizing a First Amendment to the master grant agreement. And if I may, President Forsman, on this one, maybe we can have Mr. Shuckman talk a little bit more about this. You probably read the eight projects that go under this kind of long-standing project. $10 million of it is coming from the city and the other is coming from the state, but perhaps Mr. Shuckman can expound on that.
President Forsman, Councillor Randorf, Director Fleege has done, as has Assistant City Attorney Bob Aselson, who's not here, and Attorney St. George and I all have spent a lot of time working on the Regional Exchange District implementation, along with Director Helmer prior to her departure. And this is it's certainly an eye-catching amount of money, so I certainly understand the questions. But it is the state's contribution to the medical district. and so what the resolution in front of you is the master grant agreement with the state wherein the money will flow to the city and to the hospital entities who are involved in the medical associated construction. So this is on the agenda because we have completed a long in gestation agreement with Essentia for construction of a parking garage associated with their Vision Northland project. And that allows us to bring this larger agreement to you for overall acceptance. And then almost certainly at some point, we will likely have an amendment to it. So you'll see $97 million potentially on the agenda more than once, but it is one $97 million and it is the state's.
Very good. Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. It's really exciting to see item 13, resolution 600 on here. And I was wondering if we could get a little more information. I don't know if anyone in the room perhaps knows about the locations of some of these outdoor living zones and what services might be provided there, as well as what other funding partners are taking part in this.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, I can answer pieces of that. My understanding is that the one outdoor living zone that is currently under development is at 8th Street and 3rd Avenue East. I think that is correct. And the reason I don't have the specifics is that the city is not operating that. That is being done on private property through a partnership with the Affordable Housing Coalition and CHUM. And the city is providing a financial support, which is on the agenda here, which I believe is being matched, or the intent is that it is matched by the county. And then I understand that they're looking at other funding sources as well. And this is for the outdoor living zone. And then I believe there is a vehicle, a parking lot, I believe at the Damiano, that is for car camping, essentially, for those who are doing that. And so there is a lot of work going on from CHUM and from the Affordable Housing Coalition to staff that up and to be ready to operate that. But I'm not able to speak to the specifics of it because it is not a city operation. And so what is on your agenda is city contribution to that work, and specifically with a focus on the infrastructure that goes into that, porta potties, sharps containers, trash receptacles, things that are been identified by the organizers as things that are needed and helpful. And they have done that through a specific ask to the city for support. And we've been able to provide this amount. And we are appreciative of the county's, I think, pending support in a similar amount.
Fantastic. And just to clarify, these funds are ARPA funds, from my understanding. Is that correct?
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, Director Carlson's here and can speak more specifically to it, but we are using flexibility from ARP funding to allow us to make this contribution.
Okay, I'll see her coming forward, so unless somebody has a clarifier. Councilor Anderson.
Thank you, President Forsman. And I just wanted to ask for a potential correction or affirmation. I believe that you said 8th Street and 3rd Avenue East, and I think it might be 3rd Street and 8th Avenue East.
Yeah, I have the actual address. It's 820 3rd Street East, and the property is owned by a Linnea Swenson Telexon.
Thank you, Councilor Endorf. I will also point out current Sydney ordinances do not actually allow for that, so that would be a discussion at a later date for this council.
To speak to that briefly, President Forsman, that item or that amendment to the UDC passed the Planning Commission this week, and so we will have that on an agenda for you as soon as we are able. And I appreciate the correction on location. I'm just pleased I was able to get 8th and 3rd correct, so I feel pretty good about that.
All right. Thank you, counselors. Councilor Owl, I think you're up.
Thank you, President Forsman. Item 16, Resolution 592, resolution authorizing an agreement with the County of St. Louis for a new stormwater conveyance and green infrastructure system on and under Woodland Avenue and within Hartley Park at no cost to the city.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Okay, Councillor Mayo under Public Works and Utilities.
Thank you, President Forsman. Item 17, Resolution 585, is authorizing the temporary closure of Maxwell Road if necessary, as determined by the city engineer for the Glenwood Street / Snively Road project. Item 18, Resolution 588, is authorizing the purchase of 4,100 tons of road salt from Morton Salt Incorporated in the amount of $253,485. And if I may, President Forsman. I had a question actually about each of these items. First off, with item 17, I'm curious with that Maxwell Road closure, the potential duration of what that might look like, and if that would have any adverse impact on neighbors up in that area, particularly I believe it's Oak Street that's right above it, on accessing the road down there.
President Forsman, Councillor Mayo, this is a proactive item that we want to have prepared in case of need associated with the roundabout project at Glenwood and Snively. The concern that our engineers have is that there may be, with that level of construction, there may be folks who are inclined to cut through the neighborhood. And so this is intended to be ready to allow us to control that a bit. So there's no specific timeline on a closure. There's no closure specifically planned, but it is an option that we want to have available should we.
And are there any residents that reside on that stretch of Maxwell Road? And then I'd appreciate if we have a little more information about that before Monday's meeting. That would be really helpful. And then resolution.
President Forsman, Councillor Mayo, can you be more specific about what you're looking for before Monday?
Yeah, if we could have, I would be curious about residences on that street particularly, and then the consideration of if we do have anything from maybe City Engineer Voigt about when that determination might be made of closing that. And then item 18, just a curiosity of if we are exploring any salt alternatives or chloride reduction plans for our city moving forward. I know there's maybe a couple folks in staff who have brought up some different ideas about what that could look like moving forward and if any of those alternatives are being explored at this point in time.
President Forsman, Councillor Mayo, I can share with you if I have it handy. I will track down information from staff at Street Maintenance who are working on that. As with many things, it is significantly a question of funding. It is an expensive changeover to have happen. I believe that just the first step is about $750,000. So it is a question of resources, but it is something that they work to mitigate on an ongoing basis, the amount of road salt that we use. And long term, we would love to move away from it as much as possible, and also this is a city of hills and a city of winter, and so we're trying to strike the right balance to keep people safe and also to do that reduction. And so if you're interested, I can track down kind of the outline of what that longer term plan would look like. And it does include some of the associated price tag that we would need to find to be able to make those steps.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Mayo. Seeing nothing else, Councillor Anderson under Public Safety.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 603, authorizing proper city officials to accept a one-time grant from Synovus Energy in the amount of $30,000 for the purchase of large diameter hose to outfit two engine companies that would respond to the Synovus Husky Marine Refueling Terminal and training to support Synovus Marine Refueling Terminal.
Thank you, Councillor Anderson. Seeing no councillor questions, Councillor Tomanek, if you could read in your resolutions.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 517, authorizing an agreement with Corval Constructors, Inc. for mechanical construction for the City Hall Mechanical, Electrical, and Plumbing, MEP, renewal project for an amount not to exceed $5,452,725. And their city clerk, Ian Johnson knows that there needs to be a comma in there instead of a period, so that will be corrected. Resolution 518, authorizing an agreement with Hunt Electric Corporation for electrical construction for the City Hall Mechanical, Electrical, and Plumbing MEP renewal project for an amount not to exceed $1,507,500. Resolution 590, authorizing application to the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, GMRPTC, for grant funding in the amount of up to $1,500,000 to provide improved recreational access to the restored St. Louis River estuary. Resolution 519, authorizing a contract with Gardner Builders Duluth, LLC, for the general conditions work scope of the City Hall Mechanical, Electrical, and Plumbing MEP renewal project for a total amount not to exceed $2,297,874. Resolution 593, authorizing a 3-year, 4-month lease agreement with Family Freedom Center for use of space in the Washington Recreation Center for youth programming and related services. Resolution 606, authorizing a contract with Veet and Company, Inc., for repair of storm damage to Wabasha Shekinah, the Martin Trail, for an amount not to exceed $553,987.
Thank you, Councillor Timonic. Seeing no councillors with hands up, we'll go to our ordinances to be read for the first time under Councillor Randorf first.
Thank you, President Forsman. Ordinance 25 is an ordinance authorizing the conveyance of real property in the Fairmont neighborhood to the Duluth Economic Development Authority for nominal consideration. Ordinance 26 is an ordinance amending Section 2 of Ordinance 10102, levying a tax to fund the city's park fund and setting forth the process applicable thereto, subject to referendum provided for in laws of Minnesota, 1953, Chapter 560, Section 1.
Thank you, Councillor Randorf. Councillor Timonic.
Thank you, President Forsman. I'd like to give a little background on this. In 2011, the city passed a referendum that funded the Parks and Rec Department. That has since decreased in the amount that is funded, and we'll have an explanation. I'm going to call up Director Philby Williams in a moment. But that has resulted in a decrease of 12 FTEs over that period of time. And if we don't do something to correct this, there was no inflationary clause built in, then we will see the eventual defunding, so to speak, of the parks funding. With that, I do want to say that the Duluth News Tribune had a very good article that explained this when the mayor put out an email to us earlier in the week with a slightly exaggerated headline, which needs some explanation. And for that, I'll call Director Philby Williams.
President Forsman, Councillor Timonic, thank you for the question. If approved by voters, the ordinance would amend the Parks Fund levy by changing it from a fixed amount of $2.6 million to a fixed percentage, the same fixed percentage, the same underlying tax rate that was charged in 2012 when the levy was first put into effect. One way of looking at the impact of the proposed change on property owners is to look at the impact on a hypothetical owner of a home valued at $200,000. The owner of such a home in 2012 would have paid $94.53 per year to the park fund. In 2023, if no change is made, that will be down to $58. The effect of the ordinance we are asking voters to consider would be to restore the park fund levy payment for that hypothetical owner of a $200,000 home to its 2012 level of $94.53 and maintain it at that level over time. One of the reasons why the park levy payments of many individual property owners have gone down over time is that the park fund levy as a tax that is set at a specific amount has zero ability to capture any additive value from new construction. So take the example of the new Costco, the business property valued at $11.2 million that is anticipated to generate $70 million per year of additive business activity. For all of our other taxes, that new development and the business it supports will generate substantial additional tax revenues. General fund levy in excess of $400,000 per year. Sales taxes, sizable additional sums for both the general sales tax and the road sales tax. The additive contribution to the park fund from that same Costco enterprise and property will be zero. Now, to be clear, the Costco will be making a park fund levy payment. We are estimating that it might be on the order of $3,300 next year. But unlike all other taxes, that payment will be fully offset on a dollar-for-dollar basis by subtracting the same amount from the payments of all other property owners. So that's kind of how it functions. To be clear, if approved by voters, the ordinance would represent a real year-over-year increase in the taxes paid by homeowners. However, it is also true that the effect of the ordinance would be to restore the park fund levy percentage to a former level, not to set it to some new unprecedented high. In regard to the impacts of the decreasing purchasing power of the park fund over time, Councilor Timonic is correct that reductions in the parks and recreation budget over the last 20 years have necessitated elimination of 12 FTEs. However, that reduction in 12 FTEs actually preceded the institution of the park levy. But is otherwise correct and importantly true. Councilor Timonic, there were a few different dimensions to your question. Can you tell me if there are portions of it I have not yet addressed?
Can you tell us, please, the timeline of what will happen with this referendum?
Yes. Because this is your last session before council break, the second read will be in your first August meeting, August 15th. And that will be the second reading of this ordinance will be accompanied by three resolutions. One setting the specific wording of the referendum questions that we will put forth to voters. A resolution of intent expressing the council's wish that the proceeds of any park fund levy will be invested in a geographically equitable way across our city. And a third expressing a resolution of intent expressing support for a particularly important effort in Western Duluth. If the council approves the ordinance and those resolutions on August 15th, then this would be placed on the November ballot. If there are questions about the mechanics of that, the electoral process, I would probably need to defer to Clerk Johnson or City Attorney St. George.
All right, very good. Thank you, Director Philby Williams. Do you have more?
Yep, I have a quick follow-up. Can you tell me, Director Philby Williams, what happens if council does not approve this ordinance?
Thank you for, President Forsman, Councilor Timonic, thank you for the question. The effect of that over time will be an ever-widening gap between ever-increasing cost to maintain and operate our parks and the static pot of funds available to pay for that. That gap will accrue primarily to Parks capital maintenance funding, because as the payroll costs for our small park staff increase, to cover those with a flat levy, we will necessarily move dollars from our parks capital fund to payroll. That has already had a very sizable cumulative impact. When the levy was first passed, the annual parks capital budget was around $1 million. It's now down to about $450,000 and losing $70,000 to $100,000 of value every year. So it's rapidly approaching zero. That is Parks capital budget is the only consistent year after year city funded source for capital maintenance in our parks. The funds we depend upon to replace playgrounds, to resurface sport courts, to replace roofs and boilers on community centers. At $450,000, we are already in dire straits, unable to maintain rapidly deteriorating facilities. As it approaches zero, we will increasingly face the necessity to demolish and remove assets without replacement. And that those demolitions and removals will, over time, become less planful, because as deteriorated assets continue to deteriorate, they will eventually fail altogether, but the timing of that failure is impossible to predict. So eventually we'll get to a place where we kind of got with our seawalls, where, you know, decades of neglect will all of a sudden result in a catastrophic failure that requires prompt demolition.
One clarification and one quick question. Could you clarify that if this does not pass council and if the referendum does not pass, when is the next time that possibility for the voters to vote on this would be?
President Forsman, Councilor Tomanek, I'd like to ask my colleagues, either Mayor Larson or City Attorney St. George, to speak to the question of when the next opportunity to bring this forth to voters might be, if it doesn't pass this year or if we don't bring it forward this year.
If I may, President Forsman, thank you, Councilor Tomanek. I think there were two parts to your question. The first part that I want to make sure we answer really clearly, what happens if this doesn't pass? The funding remains what it is now. So I think maybe that was an answer you were looking for some clarification on. It remains as it is currently. The next time we could bring it, so it's a choice to bring it to voters, and we could choose to do that on another ballot year. That could be next, you know, the year following. It could be the year following that. It's when we choose to have a local election.
And I know other councilors have questions, but I was wondering if Finance Director Jen Carlson wants to weigh in on this.
I'm going to bring it down a little. President Forsman, councilors, I don't know that I have a lot to contribute that that Director Philby Williams didn't already talk about. I can tell you that since 2011, inflation has been about 35%. So when you think about that, and we have a fixed amount at $2.6 million, that $2.6 million today, you know, is only able to buy $700,000 less than its purchasing power in 2011. So when he talks about the challenges with the Parks Fund at that fixed amount, that $2.6 million doesn't grow. And so we're faced with the reality and decisions of do nothing and keep the 2.6, but then with that, what are we going to do with the 2.6 and what are we going to not do? Or we can think of a way to build some growth into it. And that's why by changing it from a fixed 2.6 to the mill rate, we'll automatically build in some growth because it's based on market values. And so when you have new infrastructure coming in, new Quick Trips and Costco's and new growth coming into our city, as well as any home repairs people are doing, and the way that homes are selling for higher values, that builds in that growth to the parks fund, which then keeps up more with inflation and enables us to continue trying to maintain many parks. And so I don't know if you have more questions specifically for me. I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll go sit down and you call me up if you have some more.
Thank you so much.
Are there any other questions for Director Carlson?
I have a question. I don't know if it would be for
Dr. All right, Carlson. Go ahead, Councillor Hobbs.
So, you know, being 4 months into this term, this is, I think, a little bit out of my depth. But with the amount of money from 2012, essentially what this does is puts that tax burden back to what it was when the levy was first passed. Is that correct?
That's correct. So for a property valued at $200,000, that property owner has paid less parks tax over the years because all the other values in the city that have increased or new growth, new entities and parcels coming to the city have picked up a lot of that tax. And so that's why that $200,000 home has paid less each year, whereas now we're saying a home valued at $200,000 will pay always that $95, $94.53 rate. And so all properties in the city will pay the 0.047, I can't remember how many digits it is, based on their market value.
So it's not so much a clarification on that, since I don't live in brief finance. It is shifting the way we conduct the tax, not necessarily changing the tax rate from, I mean, we're not capping it anymore, that $2.6 million, but we are just changing the way in which we tax and evaluate for the park fund and how we're going to fund our parks with this ordinance. Is that correct?
This will generate more taxes.
Right, because it's a different, it's not that set fee of $2.6 million. So it's still collecting what we had hoped to collect in 2012. So it's restoring that tax. So if I'm understanding this correctly, it is restoring what we had at the tax rate of 2012 when we first passed the levy. But now it's also not arbitrarily capping ourselves at $2.6 million to say that that's all we need for parks for eternity. And it's also allowing us to capture growth as we continue to build, you know, have new businesses and new residents. So like the apartment complex is going to be going up on Orange Street, for example, that would then be funding our parks in a way that it's currently not funding our parks. Is that correct?
President Forsman, Councillor Hobbs, that's correct. Yes.
All right.
Follow-up question.
Go ahead, Councillor Randorf.
Thank you, President Forsman. Follow-up question to that. What will that be? Then it won't be 2.6 because with the increased property values, what is the amount that we'll be seeing?
President Forsman, Councillor Randorf, it'll be based on the RMV value, so probably a little over $4 million for 2023.
And then I had another couple follow-up questions for you or whomever wants to take it. It's kind of a twofold. We know that this increase, based on inflationary rates, we're not going to see more park maintenance. We're just going to see the same level of maintenance. We're not going to see a decrease in maintenance because I think I want to manage, expectations. We're getting emails saying, oh, great, then the neighborhood park next to me that's never been maintained will be maintained now. That's not the case, is it? We're going to see the same level of maintenance we've had before. Is that correct?
So, President Forsman, Councillor Randorf, I'm going to turn it over to Director Philby Williams to answer that.
Thank you, Director Carlson, and welcome back.
President Forsman, Councillor Randorf, this would actually give us the opportunity to reinvest, to renew, replace, refresh in a significant way. The additional, it is our intent that the additional $1.6 million of funding in 2023 and that addition ever after would be devoted primarily to parks capital maintenance. The replacement of and renewal of constructed park and trail infrastructure. Now, that might not mean that a given piece of land is weeded more often, that a given garden is weeded more often, but it will mean that the entire surrounding park will have a new playground sooner, will have new benches, stormwater management sooner, will have new and resurfaced sport courts sooner. I think it is our intent in the weeks ahead to share more with you about our vision for reinvestment with these and other funds in our parks, with an emphasis on renewal of our community athletic facilities and our most important, our priority community centers.
Director Philby-Williams, I'm going to ask you three questions that are related. If you don't have them today, that's fine, because we've got a month since this will be a second read in August. Can you refresh the council on what the total deferred parks capital number stands at?
President Forsman, I will need to talk with our facility staff to get you that precise number.
I've heard it's over $100 million in the past. Is that accurate?
It is over $100
million. Very good. And then can you help the council understand the total budget for parks maintenance? Obviously, the levy is only a piece of your total budget, but help put that in scope for us.
Yes, President Forsman, the City of Duluth's overall parks program is paid for by components of different subsets of the city budget. There's the Park Fund, which we've been discussing, which pays for the Parks and Rec Division and capital maintenance and our seasonal employees. Then there is the General Fund, which is the primary source of funding for our Park Maintenance Division. And then there are portions of the budgets of other divisions, like the Property and Facilities Maintenance Division, whose work focuses substantially on planning and designing and managing park renewal construction projects. The important part of the park fund budget, the most important part, is that it is our only go-to source for parks capital maintenance funding.
Very good. And then just to confirm, there's no sunset clause in this, correct?
President Forsman, that is correct.
Very good. All right, back to other questions for councilors. Councilor Randorf.
Thank you so much, President Forsman. As we're thinking this through and as we're looking at the budget coming up and we're thinking of how the levy possibly can impact the citizens of Duluth, how do we factor in this parks levy as we're thinking of the overall levy? Will it be another line item? Like we know 0.047, 0.5%, then we're looking, you know, I'm just trying to think of as a counseling body, how will we know, well, we've got that, add that, and how does it work in the math for us?
President Forsman, Councilor Randorf, I think it's probably best for me to call upon my colleague, Director Carlson, to help with that question.
President Forsman, Councilor Randorf, so the parks levy is a referendum levy, which means it's not part of our general operations levy. And so you will, if you look at your property tax statement, you'll see the city portion, the county portion, the school district portion, and you'll see an RMV portion. That's where that parks is. When you're thinking of the levy, you're going to set an operations levy for the city, and that is separate from the parks levy. So when you're setting levies, you'll have to bear in mind that you're not necessarily going to see the parks referendum levy with the rest of the levy because those are two separate levies. But just know that if you choose to pass this levy and if the voters do vote to approve the change in the way we're assessing this levy, then that will be separate on the property tax statement than the operations levy, which we will be discussing come September, August, September-ish.
And if we use just fictitious numbers and said we had a 6% operating levy for the city, this parks levy would equal how much in a percentage for the, when we're thinking overall impact? Is it a 0.5%?
President Forsman, Councilor Randorf, so it's going to go from 0.029 to 0.047, I believe. Okay. And so one other thing to remember is that it's really difficult this year to compare apples to apples with property taxes, because this is the first year I can remember that every property in the city of Duluth was revalued. And so the county revalued every property in the city. So you can't necessarily look at a property last year with the value of $200,000 because it's not valued at $200,000 this year. Typically, they do neighborhoods. But due to the booming housing market, the state has standards and the county has to follow those standards. And so they needed to do a market and a sales analysis on the entire city. And so that's why you see all the home values throughout the city, the different neighborhoods have increased. So that's where it gets a little challenging to say it's for sure going to be this amount. But I can tell you that right now it's about, you know, 0.029, and we're going to the, we're the referendum will say it's going to the 0.047.
Thank you. And obviously the reason why I'm asking is every decision we make obviously impacts that homeowner. Even if it's in a small increment than the levy, and it compounds basically.
Right. If I could just follow up on that, just another way to look at it and see if this is right. So it would go from about 2.6 million to 4.2-ish, I think is what's in the resolution. You divide that by 330,000, which is about a percentage point on the levy. It'd be about a 5% one-time increase if we're trying to relate it back to our general fund levy. Is that math accurate?
President Forsman, yeah.
Ballpark.
I see where you're going, yeah.
Just to try to put it in terms that I think we would normally understand. Okay, Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. On that note, I had just a few questions. And first off, for maybe the mayor, CAO Schuckman, as you are developing the budget proposals and the levy for this upcoming year, I'm curious if you're considering this as part of your impact on these property owners if this does pass?
Thank you for the question, President Forsman, Councilor Mayo. Yes, we are doing that. We actually are, as I think most all of you know, we work on the budget year round. So we are already knee deep into the budget. And yes, this is a part of the discussion as well. Yes.
All right. Thank you.
And I'm sorry, just one follow up. I'm sorry, I could have said this. You will have the opportunity, because you will vote on this up or down, your first meeting back, we will know that as we're finishing the budget proposal to bring it to you, right? So that decision will have been made by you. You know, yes, we're going to send it to the voters. No, we're not going to send it to voters. We will bring our proposed levy and the outline of our budget to you after that decision has been made. And yes, we are taking it into account.
All right. That's good to hear. And then as a part of that, with rising property values, and I know a lot of people came to us this past year and expressed concern about being able to afford, do we know if vouchers will be able to be applied to this increase, or if there are any assistance programs that people could seek out in this instance? With the one-time increase this year, and then it'll be more consistent maybe moving forward.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, I am not clear that there are vouchers that would work for this. I would need to know a little bit more about the core of what that mechanism is. It's not my understanding that that is the case. I will say that as we are putting the budget together, there's a few things that we have in that budget that this council, many councilors and administration made decisions about last year. And so those are some of the other factors that we're also taking into account.
All right. Thank you. And then just one last procedural related question. So this would require a simple majority of the council to pass, and then is it also a simple majority of the voting electorate?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Tamani.
Thank you, President Forsman. I have another question for Director Carlson. I want you to correct me on my math also. So if we are going from 0.27% to 0.42% or somewhere in that vicinity, are we looking at a 0.15% increase?
President Forsman, Councillor Tamanek, we are looking at 1.5% of home value, so $30 on a $200,000 home value. So that's how you do the math. You take the $200,000 home value, and you multiply it by the 0.047, whichever numbers are after that. So currently you can see it's at 0.029 because it's $58. And it will go to the 0.047 for everyone. And so it'll be the $95.
I'm just going to follow up with that. So as it stands now, 0.029 is 0.03%. Correct?
It's the 0.02, correct.
And it's going to go to 0.047.
Correct.
So about five one-hundredths of 1%.
4.7 minus 2.9.
Right.
4.7 minus 2.9 is 1.8.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Correct.
So the ultimate where it's going to land is 5/100ths, about 5/100ths of 1%.
President Forsman, Councillor Tamanek, I don't think I'm following your math.
Okay, let's...
Director Carlson, if you could send an email that would have the financial details in it, that would be terrific.
I'm happy to do
that. Ask a follow-up, because the thing that you told me that I heard was on a $200,000 home, it's 1.5% or $30. Is that correct?
Correct.
So to the homeowner, it's 1.5%.
Correct.
Okay, so that's
if you own, yes, correct. Regardless.
We think of increasing the levy 6% for a homeowner. We got to remember we already increased it by 1.5. So then we now have increased it 7.5. So those are, I think, the simple math we have to wrap our mind around is this means we've already increased it by 1.5.
President Forsman, Councillor Randorf, correct.
Very good. All right. Vice President Kennedy.
This is for you, Director. Could you just step back a little bit where you had talked about how large businesses that have come into the area may not be paying their fair share at this point?
President Forsman, Councillor Vice President Kennedy. So the $2.6 million right now is capped. We don't collect anymore. That's the max we collect. And that's spread based on market values. And so new businesses are going to pay a portion of that $2.6 million. And so it's not that they're not paying their fair share. What's happening is the Parks Fund isn't growing because that $2.6 million is capped and it's being spread. It means the home or parcels, properties, commercial, residential, who are valued higher are paying more, leaving, and the new properties are paying, now coming online to pay part of the $2.6 million. So lower valued properties and existing properties pay less every year because that 2.6 isn't growing. And so it's just getting spread based on the value. And so it's some people are paying less, and really when new properties come on, everybody's paying less because now they're picking up a portion of the 2.6.
I have one final question. I know it feels like we're beating this in the
ground. I'll let Vice President Kennedy finish, and then we'll go back to Councilor Randorf. And then I would make a polite suggestion that maybe we move on, since we're going to have an opportunity to do this at our next meeting, too.
So as a homeowner, I have not been paying the percentage of what was set, because now it's being spread across all the other businesses and all the other homes. So homeowners that would say that I'm going to be paying more, now you're taxing me more, is not really, I don't want to say it's not true, is not really accurate. They're just going to be paying what they should have been paying all along. So my question is who set up this process? I'm not sure. I'm not a executive budget person, but I'm not sure why it was set up like that in the first place. It didn't really leave room for us to be able to be really smart at paying for what we need to pay for and diversifying our tax. Does anybody know why?
President Forsman, Vice President Kennedy, I'm not sure that I can speak to that. I don't think anyone who is here actually was part of that decision-making process at the time. What I will just say is that my suspicion is they made the best decision they could with the information they had at the time, much like we all do every day. And I think city staff, and from working with all of you, I suspect you all pride ourselves on doing the best with what we have information-wise, and hopefully leaving it clean for those who come after us. And almost certainly we will have things that future councils and future administrations have to clean up that we did. I'm not sure we can answer that question other than to say that my personal guess is that they did the best with the information they had at the time, and now we're asking to make an adjustment to that, to rather than continue to thinly slice a pie that doesn't grow, to make that pie grow as our obligations grow because of inflation and because of increased costs.
Thank you. If I may, I may go back and look for the recording.
Councilor Randorf.
Thank you. I'll make this brief. The way I see it is we had a fixed one, but now we're going to go to a total open-ended, doesn't end percentage. Have we considered an in-between point, is if we think the number to run this park system is that $4 million, do we again cap it? Because, you know, it's not bad to say as we grow, my taxes are less and we're spreading it out even. I don't think that in and of itself is broken, because now what we're saying is we're just going to keep growing it, spending it. And I know inflation, and I know we're not being wasteful, but really from a citizen standpoint, A, having an endpoint to this wouldn't be bad, and B, having a cap to it doesn't sound like the worst case thing either. That controls spending a little bit. And so to me, I think we went from maybe a two fixed model to a unending percentage model. Maybe there's an in-between and we say it is a $4 million cap fixed, but we at least right the machine a little bit.
Anybody from the administration want to react to that?
President Forsman, with respect to Councilor Randorf, I didn't hear a specific question, and so I wanted.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't sure if you were asking.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't phrase this question. Would we consider an in-between model where we do have a cap, and it isn't, and maybe there's a sunset on this where we're going to try this out and see. I don't know. Have we thought of an additional, maybe a different model, an in-between model?
President Forsman, Councilor Randorf, I certainly would defer to the mayor to speak to this if she'd like, but I think my concern, frankly, about a cap is that that's exactly how we got into this situation, is by having that in the first place. And so my personal, from my perspective, and I think from staff's perspective, I see the mayor nodding, that would be an area of concern for me, is that we would just be back having this conversation a few years from now and having the exact same discussion. I think having a sunset period is something that we haven't, I'm not sure that we have talked about. And so, Mayor, I don't know if you want to add to that.
If I may, President Forsman, Councilor Randorf, thank you for your question and letting us know how you're kind of thinking about it. I think what we have proposed in this ordinance is the language that we think actually meets the needs of the organization the best. And based on some of the conversations that we've had with counselors who have asked about it and or requested that we revisit it, that it also matches that. And we are in a process of working this out together. So I think, you know, in the coming weeks, we can talk about, you know, what would be the impact of various pieces or restrictions or caps being put on. This is a majority vote, so not a super majority, so to speak. So just keeping track of that with you. And I will say there are instances where the sales tax for streets is 25 years long. That is capped, and it will have to be revisited in 22 years, maybe, right? 21 years. So there is an example of that that went to the voters and has a cap on it. I will say that I think in 22 or 21 years, I hope the question is revisited and continued, but I understand why calling the question periodically also has value and merit.
Very good. Councillor Hobbs, last question.
Thank you, President Forsman. I just have a question on, so assuming that this is successful and all of that, is there a plan or is it codified that the money will be equally spent amongst the five council districts?
If I may, President Forsman, Councillor Hobbs, that is one of the resolutions that we will be bringing forward, is to clearly articulate that. I really appreciate the question. It is really important to us as well that that actually is the case. And so we are really eager to bring that forward.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, I am going to move us on tonight, and we will have an opportunity for more questions at our next agenda session, since we're not actually going to be voting on this ordinance at our meeting on the 18th. So I'll just open it up if there's any general questions or comments, and then we're going to move into our broadband committee of the whole. Anything from councillors? Yeah, we'll take a quick 3-minute break before we actually start. Councillor Tomanek, though, you had something.
I did.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I may, President Forsman, we have been trying to formulate a meeting so that we can get an update on community crisis response team. So I'm wondering if we could request a committee of the whole meeting from administration that we might have that.
I can take that first. I think that would be the intent. It would follow a smaller meeting with councillors first.
Oh, okay.
It would come sometime this fall, roughly. Councillor Anderson's nodding. So, okay. That's the intent, as long as everybody's on the same page. Okay. Great. Very good. Okay. Let's 6:20-ish. We'll start for a talk about broadband. 3 minutes.
Yes. Yes, I am. Okay.
Today's day 6 or 7 working in a row.
You might say something
about a lot of emotional territory.
Eric?
Oh, Eric. Sent it. It just.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And you're saying.
Yeah.
I think any deeper we get with
this. Yeah, it's. I've.
Still on the fire.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, I've met her. Yeah.
I didn't even read his questions yet, to be honest with you. I saw there were many. I just didn't read them.
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't making it worse.
I know, it's like I was
going silent.
I was trying to pick, well, to have TBH. I was trying to finish. I couldn't find one, but I did. Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Hey, Councillor, can I bend you here for just a second?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to different thoughts.
Yes. Steve, how are you?
What is so good.
Well, I'm trying to think of why they did it back then. Was it?
Great. Well, understanding.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Bank of the real estate.
Okay, so as soon as you said I was disappointed, I'm like, I'm the food poisoning?
Hillside, well, even at 4.2 million, 5% in terms of how this council. A levy point is 330,000.
So
the math on the fixed amount it's going to go from.
That maintenance
It's great to hear the chatter. And I don't want to keep you here all night long. So we are going to get started with our discussion around broadband. This is not a set agenda. As far as formal presentations or anything like that, it is just a way for us to talk about these three resolutions and also have a chance to get an update. So just to set the stage, Director Fleege, I'll probably invite you up. Okay, now it's back. If you want to give just a little update on the administration's financing plan in coordination with returning Resolution 576 to the administration, then I also wanted to recognize that we have representatives from Charter here too, and I would like to invite them up since they have not been a part of this discussion in these chambers with council yet to have a chance to answer any questions too, if councilors have them. So, Director Fleege, would you want to, or Ms. Nygren, or whoever your representatives, come up and maybe just give us an update since the last time we had a chance to hear from staff? And also thank you to staff for hanging out till the end. This is easier for us, probably not easier for you.
Wonderful. Thank you, President Forsman and Council. Good evening. Absolutely. We have an update for you with regards to the three resolutions that were before you from the last couple weeks here. We have appreciated meeting with councilors individually and really hearing feedback on how they wish to proceed. And so you'll see there was one change with one of the resolutions being sent back to administration. And that is the Community Investment Trust Fund resolution. And then there was a change in the wording to the resolution with regards to applying for the border-to-border grant funding. So looking at reducing the total grant ask from that $4.8 million to what you see before you, which is a $3.2 million ask, and then the Dig Once policy, which remains unchanged.
All right, very good. Are there any questions from councilors on any of the resolutions for staff tonight? Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. So with the CIT resolution being sent back to administration and the reduction in that ask, how does that impact the scope of the project? And then what we'll be looking at for just the details of and timeline potentially of how that'll move forward.
Thank you, President Forsman, Councilor Mayu. The scope of the pilot project has been shifted to only include the Lincoln Park map. So that census tract 156, and that aligns with the reduced ask of council for that grant application. The timeline remains unchanged. So we are still looking to apply on that August 4th deadline, and then looking to come back to council whether or not we do receive those funds, which we should expect to hear on that sometime in September. And so we'll be coming back to council with that information, along with, as mentioned before, an initial construction bid costs, as well as a plan for a future citywide rollout of the project.
So at that time, would the CIT resolution come back to the table if we were awarded those funds?
there would be an opportunity to come back to council at that time if we were not to receive the border-to-border grant funding.
Thank you.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, I think I would just add to Ms. Nygren's very good summary that part of what we will be able to do over the coming months is better understand what options we have for funding. It may include a CIT request. It may be that we're able to access grant money in other forms. But part of what the adjustment that was made by Ms. Nygren and Mr. Fleeves this week was to allow for us to apply for that grant without making it contingent on that CIT ask and provide us some opportunity to look at options for this pilot that may.
Councillor Alstead.
Do we foresee any issues with the border-to-border grant, and what will that look like as you're applying?
President Forsman, Councillor Alstead, we really feel that we're going to present a strong application. We have spent the last 12 months, as you know, diving in and getting that speed test information. There will be an opportunity for us to present on that in the application, specifically citing that we do have average speeds around that 54, 55 megabytes download and around that 8 megabytes upload. And so that is a key point of our application and really adds to that strength by demonstrating that we have an underserved portion of our city. Did you have an additional question? Okay.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Alstead. Councillor Hobbs.
Thank you, President Forsman. So with sending the CIT resolution back to administration, does it impact the grants application's competitiveness by not having an identified match, or is it just a non-germane point?
Thank you, President Forsman, Councillor Hobbs. We've been talking with DEED on what that would look like, and from our discussions, the way that the wording is for this resolution, where we still are setting ourselves up for future match sources if we were to receive the funds, is in line with what they require for the match funding. So we do not see any loss in the number of points that we would be able to receive for the application. Thank you.
All of them. Thank you, President Forsman. So with the reduced ask and then also not having it, we could still be asking for CIT funds. Is that correct? Or we're trying to see what other available funds we would have to potentially fund the smaller ask? Is that Councillor Anderson's been having bags of chips, so I might have missed your answer.
President Forsman, Councillor Hobbs, Councillor Anderson's chips. One of the things we're going to do over the coming months is look at options. I think that it is it would be not very honest to say we wouldn't consider CIT as an option, but also that we do have time, by the way this is structured, to look at potential options, be aggressive in pursuit of grant opportunities, and just make sure we have a full understanding of what the financial opportunities for the pilot are.
If I may, thank you, Mr. Shuckman, President Forsman. I won't address the chips, Councillor Hobbs. I will just say the timing of this grant application is really important. And so I want to be clear, my first ask would still be the one that we had on the table. I really think that is the right ask. That's not where we're going to get in the next timeline, and that's not where council is. I respect that. It is critically important that we get this application in, however, and having spoken with Commissioner Grove earlier in the week, shared with him our digital master plan, talked through different points with him, he's very clear on what's happening, very much understands our interactions with staff. I'm honestly quite appalled at the up and down speeds that our community is experiencing based on the testing that we are doing and have done. It is just really important that we don't miss this. I really think we are positioned to be competitive and successful. If we are not, it's a two-year application. So this is how we get in for a queue for the next 2 years. We cannot apply again until 2024. And it will be important for us in chasing and building out any system, whether it's simply the pilot, which is the ask before you now, the citywide is not before you now, it's for a pilot. as we're inching or building out or approaching or thinking that, we have to be able to demonstrate that we've gone after every resource. So we think and are really clear, and thank you to Ms. Nygren and Director Fleege and Mr. Robertson, the whole team, because it has been a lot of reworking to make sure that we're meeting the needs and concerns of counselors, that we're meeting the needs and concerns of residents, but that we're also doing it to remain really competitive.
Thank you, Councillor Hobbs. Ms. Nygren or whoever, if you could remind us the sources of funding for the match for the one-time economic development funds. I know Director Fleege has mentioned these before, but just so that we're all tracking.
So I will say how it's written in your resolution for Monday. It would be conditional upon funding, so receiving an award as well as council accepting that award. And then I would turn to CAO Shuckman to give the answer for the alternative potential sources of funding.
And just to be clear, I'm talking about the city money that we have said, like the TIF district that's expiring, et cetera.
Yeah. Okay. I can speak to that. We have several economic development sources of revenue that we expect over the next year that really are a good fit for this funding. Like you said, including a retired TIF district, sale of a building. Those are potential sources that we've been looking at, as well as council did commit $1 million in ARP funds. So that would be included in that cost.
Could we get an email on that just to break that down a little bit before Monday, if that's okay?
Absolutely.
Very good. Any other questions for staff on any of the broadband resolutions? And I think they'll still probably be here if any are thought of in a second. I would also thank you, Ms. Nygren. Great job, as always. We have representation from Charter here tonight, and just because we have not heard from them directly, I think I would invite their representative to come up, and if there's any comments you want to make, and then I'll just open it up to counselors if you have any questions to ask Charter of as one of our incumbent utilities here.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation to be here tonight. My name is Amanda Dewar. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Charter Communications, SOTA. So appreciate the opportunity to speak about our services and plans for the city, and happy to take any specific questions that you may have for me.
One question I have, just to maybe get started, maybe we won't have any questions, but I was wondering, Ms. Dewar, if you could share a little bit more about any plans that you have for the city, any investments that you're planning on making, just any potential things that we should know about as far as where you're at with all of that.
Sure. Well, I would say that maintaining a broadband network is a continuous thing. You know, there's continuous investment in a system. For example, just this year, since the beginning of the year, we've raised our lowest speed tier from 100 megabits. We raised it to 200 in March, and just 2 weeks ago increased it to 300 megabits per second download, and all at no cost increase to customers. So things like that, increasing speeds, increasing network security, redundancy, those are investments that we're continuously making.
Okay. Any questions from Councilor Rander?
Thank you, President Forsman. A question for you: when we talk about our census track in Lincoln Park and how it's a struggle with their and I'm sorry if I'm using the wrong terminology, their uploads and downloads. Why is that? What can you do? What can your company do to help that? And why maybe hasn't it been done yet?
I would kind of like to point out some issues with the speed tests. I know they're referenced in the floor, but you know the type of speed test that was used there specifically by MLAB are notoriously unreliable, these user-based speed tests. You know, beyond the fact that a user usually does a speed test when they're experiencing issues, the fact of the matter is that they're just set up for a whole bunch of variables. For example, like if there's more than one person using the internet within the home, or if the person is not connected hardwired,
and is accessing it versus via Wi-Fi, or if their devices are old and slow and don't have the ability to go up. So, you know, this specific MLabs was recently cited in a report, and I can send in the link for having high variability in their speed test results. So, you know, the best way to test speeds is to actually test right at the tap what's going into the home.
So based on that, what is your knowledge of the connectivity for that census tract in Lincoln Park then?
We as Charter Communications in a recent FCC report, we exceeded our advertised speeds 100% of the time. This was an independent FCC test, testing our network, measuring our speeds. And I have been with personally when the Office of Broadband has administered speed tests in grants that we've received, and the speed tests are always above what is advertised. So, you know, I that's all I can say about that.
Councillor Mayle.
Thank you, President Forsman. Can you tell us about what Charter may have done to increase speeds and or reduce costs for customers without funding from the federal government?
Well, like I just mentioned, we have increased our speeds twice this year from our starting, you know, base level tier for customers from 100 to 300 at no cost to any customer. But for the past 6 years, we've had our own low-cost internet option called Spectrum Internet Assist. That's, you know, been for 6 years, long before any ACP or emergency broadband benefit. And that program is available to families that qualify for free or reduced school lunch or seniors on SSI. And that's been a long-standing program. In addition to that, we have bulk rate programs that we've worked with either school districts or housing authorities so that residents or students could get free internet by working directly with either the HRA or the school district to identify the end-use customer and having a bulk rate there. So there's a lot of options outside of grants and subsidies.
And just a few follow-up questions. The Internet Assist program, what speeds are on that program?
That's the 30 megabits down, 4 megabits up, $17.99 a month.
And then the 300 megabytes per second increase from that 100 megabytes, which it was at before, is that available to everyone across the country? Or
yes.
Okay, because I know at one point I had been told that it would be available to me as a customer, and it was not. Okay.
Yeah, it's only been the past 2 weeks that we've or so that it's been 300.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Mayle. CEO Schechtman.
President Forsman, if you're open to it, I think Ms. Dahlgren may have some specifics on the survey data that we have put together that would be a helpful piece of context from the city standpoint. I want to make sure that councillors have what they need from Charter as well. But I know that that she has some context that she can provide as well that would likely be a helpful add.
Sure. I think what I'll do is I'll have Ms. Nigren come back up before we wrap up and see if there's any questions still for Charter. One question I had was around payback period. So just from a utility standpoint, could you give us a little benchmarking on how long a project where you would put in a new fiber line would typically return on your investment?
Yeah, and I mean, I know what was cited in the report was within 1 year there would be payback, but you know, as a company that operates in 41 states with 32 million customers, that is not our experience at all. For our modeling, we use a 5-year back.
And do you have any statistics on how much fiber is in the city of Duluth, if there's plans on putting fiber within the city or, you know, increasing speeds to that that gig up, gig down that fiber connections typically have. At least that's my understanding.
Yep. So yes, I mean, in the city of Duluth, there obviously is already a significant fiber infrastructure. What we operate is called a hybrid fiber coaxial network. So it's got a fiber backbone, and then it's a coaxial drop to the individual homes. But in terms of upgrading to gig symmetrical, just in March, our CEO announced that, you know, we're working on a roadmap to transition there eventually. So yes, it's definitely in the books for our network growth and expansion.
Okay. Councilor Meehl.
Can you clarify if that fiber connection throughout the city is privately and exclusively owned by Charter? Yes. For your operations? It's, yes, not open to any other providers?
Correct. Yep. And I mean, that is our business model for a variety of reasons, both, you know, in terms of there's an outage and we need to respond to it, we'll know where it is and have access to it. And also network security and national security concerns. We do not operate on others' networks at all.
I guess last question for me. Can you remind us how many folks work in the Duluth area for your company?
Yeah, it's our second largest employment center in Minnesota. Obviously, we've got several call centers down in Rochester, so that is our largest. But I believe it's about between 50 and 60 right now.
Councilor Rander.
Thank you, President Forsman, and thank you again for being here. We appreciate you being here and answering these questions for us. We're obviously focusing on this Lincoln Park census tract for a reason. And my questioning has been around really your penetration in that and the speeds in that. Do you know, I mean, are you able to tell us what your penetration is in that particular census tract that we're looking at? How many homes are served? Do they have access?
Everyone in that neighborhood is served, meaning that they have access. Like anyone in the Lincoln Park neighborhood, should they want to, could call up Charter Spectrum and sign up for our service right now. In fact, our footprint covers 97% of the city. There's a little bit of an area to the very north along the coast, obviously, where it's more rural, and a little bit of an area out to the west, again, where it's very rural, where we don't cover. But, you know, and again, for those areas, just a couple of years ago, we applied for a border-to-border broadband grant for an area along Getchell Road that there was a small pocket that didn't have home. And Councilmember Kennedy, you know, wrote a letter of support for us for that. So we got that done. So that's something we're always willing to explore in terms of access. But I think the issue in Lincoln Park, from what I hear, is the affordability. And I think, you know, the truth of the matter is right now, anyone in Lincoln Park that qualifies could get free internet. You know, the affordable connectivity program, for one, is a $30 voucher. We have a program that we just created, Spectrum 100. That costs $29.99 a month for folks that qualify for the Affordable Connectivity Program. So they could get that right now. Our longstanding Spectrum Internet Assist, $17.99 a month. So obviously that would be free. If they wanted a higher package, they could use the $30 off a month there. So we are actively trying to market the Affordable Connectivity Program to the households that qualify for it. But I think, and I know some of you were at our presentation at the League of Minnesota Cities, adoption and getting folks to sign up for broadband access is a huge part of the challenge here.
So the number of, I know everyone has access, but the actual number of customers in that census tract, do you have access to that data?
Like specific numbers that subscribe to,
yeah,
our service?
Yeah.
I don't have it with me right now, but I could try to see,
okay,
you know.
That would be an interesting number for us to have. Thank you.
I think Councillor Owl had her hand up, and then we'll go back to Councillor Meehl.
Thank you for being here. Thank you, President Forsman. I was at the presentation at the League of Minnesota Cities, and I wasn't able to ask my question then. I hope you don't mind asking. Yeah. Now, you had talked about the voucher program and the digital navigators that are present. So my question was, if, say, a resident wants to apply for the voucher program, my understanding coming away from that meeting is that they would have to apply through the state. They would have to get the voucher. It's not Charter who gives the voucher, or is that incorrect?
It's administered by the FCC, and I actually have handouts that I can give you tonight that, you know, you go to the FCC, set up a website for the Affordable Connectivity Program. You know, there is a long list of what makes you qualified for that, which I can read off: Pell Grant recipients, National School Lunch Program, SNAP, Medicaid, Housing Assistance, SSI, WIC, Veteran or Survivor Benefit. So a wide variety of folks can do that. So you go to the FCC website, get it. They'll give it, and then you can pick your provider, and you get the voucher. You pick your provider, and then it is administered through your bill with the provider. And I think it's also important to note that Charter is not the only broadband provider within the city of Duluth. You know, there's an independent website, Broadband Now. Your native or your incumbent ILEC, Lumen, CenturyLink, whatever you care to call it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for explaining the voucher program. So they would have to apply for that voucher, get that voucher, and then bring it to Charter to be applied to their bill. Is there a what is the approximate turnover time for that from the moment they apply, from the moment they get that voucher?
I know it's pretty fast. I mean, it's FCC that does the approval and then turns it to us. But as soon as we get it, it's quick. So I guess I can't speak to the FCC's processes, but I know people who have done it in my own family, and it was very quick.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. Outside of those voucher-related programs or the income-related programs, are your regular rates, are those tailored to census tracts at all, or to municipal income levels or different factors within each community that might impact people's ability to pay, especially like with the price increases that may happen year after year with those?
Sure. Well, Spectrum uses nationwide pricing. We are in 41 states, so our pricing everywhere is the same, and that is to provide a benefit for the rural, more dispersed customers. You know, they pay the same price as our customers in LA, even though it probably took a lot more capital and expense to build out there. So we use nationwide pricing.
Okay, thank you.
You're good. Any other questions? Or Ms. Stewart, thank you for being with us tonight. I appreciate that. And I would invite Ms. Nygren back up if there's anything else you want to close with. And I'll open it up for one last lightning round if there are any other questions, and then we will adjourn for the night.
Thank you, counselors, and thank you to Ms. Doerr for joining us today and her continued open communication as we've been going through this process. I just wanted to give some additional context to really point to some pieces of the Digital Access Master Plan as you are thinking about this issue and hearing from some of our providers. And a part of that is, you know, we were tasked by council to come and present this findings really around those three principles of affordability, reliability, as well as competition. And so that is the context in which we provided these recommendations. And during the process that we've been considering this application to Minnesota DEED, when we were looking at the application, it required us to send out a letter to our current providers letting them know that we are considering making an application and to ask them specifically what types of investment that they are looking to make in our community. And the response that we've received has been, as council has picked up, that there is no current investment, additional investment from these current ISP providers. So continuing on, we would see no change in those three principles of affordability, competition,
and reliability without recommendations or action. And so some of the pieces that I wanted to specifically call out in the digital master plan would be then the upload and download speeds. So in addition to the MLabs data, we also use another source, RAMS speed test, and we've been in continuous communication as we can be with the Office of Broadband Development. And I wanted to note as well in the example provided by Ms. Dewar on the low income affordability plan that Charter has available, as well as other providers in that $30 or less range, with the addition of that taxpayer subsidy, the AACP funds, which would reduce that cost to residents. However, with the speeds, as Ms. Dewar shared with you tonight, that would be considered underserved, as stated by the Office of Broadband Development. So we are asking citizens to come in at that affordability rate with the different voucher and other programs is still usually in that underserved category. So I really feel that it's important to call that out. Finally, I just want to end with currently residents are paying on average $70 to $80 per month for their service. You'll see in that survey of 1,700 residents that they felt overwhelmingly supportive of some type of city-sponsored solution, as well as the reliability of their current internet, as well as the affordability was a challenge. They really saw that $30 to $40 range as much more affordable. And then finally, just wanting to end that the great opportunity with an open access fiber network, as outlined, is that we continue to invite in great providers for that internet service to join us in this work. It is truly an opportunity for new folks to come into our market, as well as for our current providers like Charter to better serve their existing customers, as well as expand their consumer base. And I'll take any additional questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nygren. Any last questions from Ms. Nygren tonight? Councilor Andor.
Thank you, President Forsman. Would we be able to, in this scenario, be able to access the FCC vouchers to be able to increase affordability in this scenario as well?
Absolutely.
And what is our, and I think, I don't know, $50 is in my mind. Is that our price point we're trying to reach, 50 or lower?
That is correct. So outlined in the Digital Access Master Plan for both the pilot project as well as any potential citywide build out is looking at that $50 or less range for inclusive of that build out infrastructure cost within that monthly average resident cost.
All right. Very good. Going once, twice. Thank you very much. Have a good night, everybody.
I think half of us have. Oh, look, yeah.